I'm Myrtle. I'm a member of the Pikes Peak Al-Anon family group. I'm one of the bleeding deacons. If any of you alcoholics or non-alcoholics don't know what a bleeding deacon is, it is someone who's been on the program probably 15 or 16 years and never misses a meeting. And you kind of want things to go exactly right, and they never do. It's really a pleasure to be here this afternoon. When I first heard that I was to be chairman, they thought I'd have quite a little time. On last Sunday, I was notified I'd have 8 minutes. Thursday, I got a letter and told me I could have a short 5 minutes. Now, we like to open our Al-Anon meetings with a moment of silence, a minute of silence. But if anybody thinks that I'm going to take 1 minute out of that five to hear people be quiet, they're mistaken. We have a preamble in our Pikes Peak Al-Anon group, and it goes something like this. In conducting this meeting tonight, I wish to state that anyone... Let me start again. In conducting this meeting tonight, I wish to state that we stick strictly to the Big AA book, to the 12 steps and the 12 traditions. We don't deviate from them. We understand that you can have any opinion you want, but this is my opinion as of tonight, and you can agree or disagree as you see fit. The family group has a threefold purpose. First, to grow spiritually by living the 12 steps of AA. Second, to give understanding to the alcoholic in the home. And third, to give aid and comfort to the families of alcoholics who still might be suffering. We ask that there be no gossip nor complaints about the alcoholic's faults at meetings. We are not there to take the alcoholic's inventory. We're there to help ourselves to take our own inventory and study our shortcomings. And if anybody thinks that any Al-Anon woman or man, a non-alcoholic, comes into the program and believes that there's anything wrong with them, you're crazy. There was nothing wrong with me that if my alcoholic mate stopped drinking, everything would be fine. But we learn that we are there to study our shortcomings and try to attain a peace of mind that will make life worth living. It's my privilege this afternoon to introduce a fine Al-Anon speaker. She comes from Laguna Beach. She's a grandmother, a mother, and a grandmother. She told me yesterday that she was in a position where she could socialize a little bit, she could play a little bridge, she could do some civic work. But she has turned her life, the same as I have, over to Al-Anon to help those families who still suffer. We don't try to work with the alcoholic, but we do try to help the families who are still suffering. So I now would like to introduce Elsa from Laguna Beach.
Thank you. Good afternoon, my very dear friends of AA and Al-Anon. It's wonderful to be here with you. This is my first trip to Denver and to meet those of you who reside here. Can you hear me in the back of the room? Good. We have had such a time today with this microphone, I want to be sure that I can be heard, even though I don't have much of a message to bring you. As our leader said, we get up here merely to share our experience, strength, and hope with those of you who wish to listen. And if I say something that is helpful, I'll be awfully, awfully grateful. And if I don't, you'll know that there wasn't anything there today. My husband taught me a very, very wonderful thing, because in the beginning, the very thought of getting up and making an extemporaneous speech scared the living daylights out of me. And he said, "Do you know what's the matter with you?" And I said, "No, I don't. I know I'm just scared speechless." And he said, "The matter with you is that you want their approval." Oh, my. And if you can get up there and just say what is in your heart and not care whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, you'll be home free. And it's made it easier for me to talk since. I still get nervous, And I still don't know when I get up here what the first word is going to be. But I just say a little prayer that perhaps I can say something that might help somebody. I am one of the ones who agrees with Joe this morning that alcoholism is a family disease. It affects every member of the family. But I would say this too, that if we non-alcoholics think that our defects of character have been caused by the alcoholic, we have another guest coming. Because we all had them long before we ever met our alcoholic. But living with alcoholism somehow or other has a tendency to exaggerate any defect that we might happen to have. And we end up at the end of the line as sick as, and sometimes I think sicker than, the alcoholic. There are many of us who end up in institutions. We had one girl in our group in Laguna who had been in three times. And I think that it is possible that many alcoholics cannot understand what is the matter with us after they get sober. They will say to themselves, okay, you said you wanted me to be sober, now I'm sober. What's the matter with you? I thought this was what you wanted. But we were discussing this just a few minutes ago. It seems as though when the alcoholic gets sober, he begins to change. And unless his mate changes along with him, there is difficulty. And even then, there might be some difficulty because we're both changing. And it takes some time. It takes a whale of a lot of readjustment. And it takes a lot of love and a lot of patience. And many of us are not long on patience, I can assure you. And another thing that I would like to bring to the attention of the alcoholics here is how much like you we who marry you are. I find in myself nearly everything that the alcoholic talks about. And I would like to give you just a short rundown on my background. I'm not going to dwell too much on it. To give you an idea of what I mean when I say I'm like you in so many, many ways. The only thing I seem to lack is the allergy. I am an only child. I was brought up by parents that were so afraid that I would be spoiled that they leaned over backwards in being strict. And they never would allow me to make a decision for myself. I was told what to think, when to think it, and how to think it, and what to do. And the result was that even now it is difficult for me to make a decision. If any of you have children, please do start letting them make decisions, even if they're wrong. Because the only way, apparently, that we learn to stand on our own two feet and be a person is when we are allowed to make our own mistakes and learn thereby. I was a horribly, horribly shy child. I remember when I started to high school, I was so afraid to speak to anyone on the school grounds unless they spoke to me first. And the result was that I got the reputation in high school of being the biggest snob in school. This is the usual result of that kind of behavior. And when I was in my junior year, one of my friends inveigled me into trying out for a play. And much against my better judgment, I finally did. And strangely enough, I got the part I tried out for. And stranger still, it was the part of a very decided siren. As I remember, the name of the play was The Professor's Love Story. And during the play, I was supposed to flirt with and get this absent-minded professor to pay some attention to me. Well, I skipped one thing that I wanted to tell you, and let me go back just a little bit. The alcoholic so often talks about being a mixture of strange things, strange characteristics. I think I was a mixture of strange characteristics, too, because I was a terrific tomboy as a young girl. Athletics were my one big field. I remember that I did not enjoy playing with the girls half as much as I enjoyed playing the games that the boys played. I loved to play football, I loved to play basketball, tennis, swimming was my big sport. But on the other hand, the only talents that I had were in the artistic field, art, drama, and music. I don't believe those usually go together, but this happened to be the way it was with me, and possibly was one of the reasons why I felt so different from and other than the other kids. And like I have heard so many, many alcoholics say, I never really felt a part of, because I felt different from. And I was never at ease. I never had a line. I couldn't do the chit-chat that the youngsters did with each other. It was impossible for me. I remember that I went with a young chap who was a graduate lawyer from Harvard University. And you know, in Harvard, they learn this type of back-and-forth talk that so many of you alcoholics indulge in. It's rather a sharp, sarcastic, critical, needling sort of a deal. And I can remember so well how bored I got with this young man. And I'd go on a date with him, and we'd go up on Mulholland Drive to look at the view, and I would fall asleep listening to him talk. And so I was not the most popular girl in the world. But let me get back to this high school thing now. When I got grease paint in my nostrils, nothing would do then that I would follow the drama. And I almost broke my mother's heart because she had hoped that I would become a singer as she was. But this experience, as little as it was, I was fairly successful, gave me something that I don't believe that I could have gotten any other way. It taught me how to put up a front. And no matter how scared I was, I could stand up before an audience and act as calm and as poised as you please. And I carried that front with me up until just a few years ago, believe it or not. No one ever knew what kind of emotions I had inside of me. Perhaps my husband did during the drinking years, but that's another story. When I was a freshman in college, I met a young man that many of you know, a very, very handsome young man. In fact, I thought he was the most beautiful thing I'd ever laid eyes on in my life. And I fell desperately head over heels in love with this young man, the one and only love affair of my life. My father, I think, must have had some idea of what lay in store for me because he tried every way in the world to keep me from marrying him. But, of course, the more he talked, the more stubborn I got. And I married this young man. And I realized that he drank, but I did not have any idea how much. And you see, I had come from this lovely, lovely old school. Many of you that are as old as I am will probably remember where if a boy came to a dance with liquor on his breath, he was immediately ostracized. Well, this does not make you particularly sympathetic with anyone who drinks too much, I can promise you that. And I'm afraid that I gave my husband, on the few occasions in the early part of our marriage, a pretty bad time when he did drink too much. We had two sons 6 years apart. And as all of you know, since alcoholism is a progressive disease, it got worse and worse during the years. And I will not tell my husband's story. That is not my business. That is his business. I will tell my story and how it affected me and what my attitudes were and what I learned when I finally began to get well. We have a little pamphlet in Al-Anon called Do's and Don'ts, and they're very specific. And if there's a one of those don'ts that I didn't do, I'm sure there isn't a one of them that I didn't do. I poured the liquor down the sink. I argued with a drunk alcoholic. I begged and I pled and I screamed and I yelled and I used language that no lady uses. And I got sicker and sicker and sicker. And after having built up a little self-confidence during the years that I had done a little public work, I began to lose it all. And I became a complete and utter nothing. In fact, I think the thing that expresses it the best is that I became a complete and utter doormat. In some areas, and a fighting tiger in others. I cannot help but go along with our second step, especially the sanity part of it, because the things that I did, certainly no sane person does. And if the non-alcoholic does not like that word insanity, you can just say, okay, is it sane thinking? And certainly, the way I lived and the way I thought was not sane. Because there were many times that if I had had a weapon to my hand, I think I'd have beaten his brains out. And I remember so well something that one of our lovely Canadian friends said in Winston-Salem, several years ago, and I think this shows pretty well how the non-alcoholic feels. She said, I wished he would die, and then I was afraid he'd get hurt. I don't think any more need be said about the way we feel. We go from one extreme to the other. I know that many times I wished my husband would die in an alcoholic convulsion, so that perhaps I might then find a way to live that did not include this drinking, and that possibly my children and I might be able to find some kind of happiness. I remember, too, a gal saying a long time ago that she used to go to the bedroom door where her husband was lying in an alcoholic stupor, and peek around the corner and say, die. Just die. And then another one that one of our girls in the Laguna group told us one day that just tickled the living daylights out of me. And for those alcoholics who object to their wives going to Al-Anon, maybe the non-alcoholic better use this excuse. Her husband is still practicing, and he objected to her going very strenuously, and he said, what in the world do you need to go to those things for? And she turned to him very calmly and said, I am going to these meetings in order to find out how not to kill you. Needless to say, he gave her the keys to the car and let her go, and he's never objected since. And I am one of the gals who have came to AA for 6 years before Al-Anon was born. I have left out a good bit of my story because I don't want to take up too much time. And I would prefer to talk about what I have learned in this program rather than what happened to me, because all of you have been through the same sort of thing, to the point where you finally make up your mind, even though you have been on the fence for years and years and years, shall I or shan't I? Shall I leave or shall I stay? And you have become a devout coward, and finally you're forced into doing something about the situation, and so you start divorce proceedings. And fortunately for me, before the divorce was even well on its way, my husband came to AA. And we've had 18 and a half years of delightful, wonderful living. And as I say, I came to AA with him for 6 years before Al-Anon was born, and I am sure that a great deal of the AA program rubbed off on me without my even being aware of it. I think you get it by osmosis if you stick around long enough. But Al-Anon has done something for me that AA could not possibly do, because I had to have someone to identify with. And it takes a non-alcoholic to be able to identify with a non-alcoholic and an alcoholic to identify with an alcoholic. And shortly after, Lois Wilson came to the coast, bringing the idea of Al-Anon to us. I started a meeting in our home in Beverly Hills. And I spent about 4 or 5 years with that group, the first three of it, pretty well running it myself, because I was the oldest member around in experience with this program. And I found it very easy to use the words. I could tell everybody else how to live, but I wasn't doing such a good job myself. And it wasn't until I moved to Laguna Beach, we moved to Laguna Beach, 7.5 years ago, that things began to happen that forced me into another step in growth. Because there was not much Al-Anon down there, and I wasn't able to go very often. And I began to feel that old inadequacy creeping back, that old feeling of being useless, of not having an aim in life. My husband, Laguna, as you know, is about 57 miles south of Los Angeles. And my husband, when he was talking during the week, was leaving from his office in Los Angeles, and I was stuck down there all by myself. And the old, old pattern came back. Poor me. I didn't have him when he was drinking, and now that he's sober, I still don't have him. Poor me. I need more consideration. I'm not getting my just due. I'm not getting my proper respect. And you know what happened. I became very, very discontented with me. And it was my youngest son who saved my life. I expressed this to him one day, and he said to me, "Mom, why don't you start another Al-Anon group?" And this is exactly what I did. And this has been my lifesaver. This wonderful, wonderful group of women who had known nothing about Al-Anon in the beginning when they first came, and who kept coming back and kept coming back, and believed everything that I told them in words and put it into practice and proved it in their own lives. And then they began handing it back to me. And they finally showed me what was the matter with me. And I finally came to realize that the thing that had been pulling me around by my nose all of my life was my terrible, terrible need for approval and my fear of disapproval, especially from my husband. I couldn't stand it. And I began to see that I had become a shadow of my husband, that I was, when I spoke, was speaking his words. I was not being myself. I was trying to be what I thought he wanted me to be and what you wanted me to be, and I was never myself. I had lost all of my personal integrity. I was not a person any longer. I was not doing my own thinking. I did not have my own ideas. And I finally had to see that as long as I was depending upon approval, I was in trouble. That I had to be the best me I happened to be able to be that day. And that was the only me that I could be right then. And that I would have to get busy and take a real inventory and find out what it was that made me tick, and to be able to get back my own sense of dignity, my own personal integrity, to be able to stand up on my own 2 feet and be a person again. And this is what I am endeavoring to do at this moment. And this wonderful group that is so full of love and sharing has helped me with this no end. And I have learned to be more flexible. I have learned to release better than I have ever learned to release in my life. One of the speakers in the Alateen meeting this morning was talking about release with love. I thought we had coined that phrase down in Southern California, but I find that we haven't. Release with love. What does this mean? People often ask me, or ask the group, what is the difference between release and rejection? And the way I feel about it personally is, to me, rejection is pushing aside with bitterness, with resentment, and saying, I just don't need you any longer. Get out of my life. But release with love is, to me, for once in my life, I am allowing you to be a person in your right. I am taking my hands off your life. I am even giving you the right to be wrong. Apparently, we only learn by making mistakes. I've had to learn to take my hands off my children's life. I've had to learn to take my hands off my friends' lives. We make pretty good managers, we people. And we get so upset because people do not act the way we think they should act. And as long as I am depending upon the actions and reactions of people outside of myself just that long, am I going to be miserable? And you know, it's a funny thing. I can be miserable as long as I'm willing to be miserable. And when I'm no longer willing to be miserable, I'll get busy and do something about it. And this is exactly what has happened because I had been miserable long enough. Release with love. To allow everyone the human dignity to make his own mistakes, to find his own answers in his own way, in his own time, and find his own way back to that power greater than himself. I have had to do this myself, and now I am having to allow my husband and my children to find their own way. I often see my youngsters making mistakes that I would like to see them not make, but I'm afraid they're going to have to if they are going to learn to stand on their own 2 feet. This program, to me, is one of the most wonderful things that has ever happened to me. I have the feeling that we have a tendency to be entirely too serious with ourselves, we non-alcoholics. I do wish that I had the ability to give the light touch like my husband does, but I don't seem to have this. I asked him a while back if I had a sense of humor. He said, well, you're better than you used to be. The funny part of it is I enjoy things, but I don't seem to be able to be very humorous myself. There's a gal down here sitting in the front row that I'd give $1 million if I had her sense of humor. She's terrific. We talk a great deal in Al-Anon back there about the light touch. And I would like to give you just one little example that I think is a very good one. One of our girls, whose husband was still practicing, went home one night from a meeting and started cooking dinner, and she had everything cooking merrily on the stove. And her husband came in feeling no pain, very much the worse for wear, and asked her where the car keys were. And she said, they're over there in my purse. So he goes over and gets her purse and brings it back and dumps the entire contents in the middle of the food that's cooking on the stove. Well, you can imagine what her response was. She turned around and pushed her little girl, and a girl looked at her very startled and started to cry and ran in the other room and kicked her brother. And the little boy started to cry and ran out in the yard and kicked the dog. You know, this there's a chain reaction about these things that we do. And while this program is not a Pollyanna program, it is not a weak program, because we try to keep from reacting to the alcoholic anymore and to other people and situations and things, many people get the impression that we're just becoming sort of a panty-waist group. But I think there is great strength in being able to not react to a situation. You know, they say that it isn't what happens to you that makes the difference, it's how you react to it that is important. I also believe that if you have something that you need to say, why shouldn't we say it? I used to be a walker on eggs. I was afraid to open my mouth for fear I might cause trouble, because the old approval bit was there, you see, and I was afraid that if I said what I thought, that I would not get approval, and therefore my feelings would be hurt. And being as sensitive as the alcoholic, my feelings can get hurt real easy. And this is another department in which we're very much like the alcoholic. We're highly emotional people too, don't kid yourselves. We're perfectionists, we're idealists, right along with you. We may not have it quite to the degree with which you have it. They tell me, I heard a tape a while back by Einar Hansen, who is a blind psychologist who is also a member of our fellowship. And he said in that tape, the alcoholic over-responds to everything. And I think this is true. And maybe this is where there might be a little bit of difference between us, but not a great deal. This is why I think we become so sick, too. And if the non-alcoholic and the alcoholic can, as a family, go down this pathway together and yet separately, I like to put it this way, it's like two railroad tracks, together but separately, each one in his own way, in his own time, not interfering with the other one's program, and yet both going the same direction. I've been quite disturbed for some time by the number of families in our area that seem to be breaking up after sobriety. And I've wondered what the reasons for this were. And I have a feeling it is because there is not a mutual working of this program with a hands-off policy. Each one watching the other one, like I used to watch Chuck in the early years of his going to AA, making book on him and saying, you ought to be doing this, and have you been doing that? Are you taking an inventory? I've never seen you take a written inventory. I'm not sure you have, you know. And very much interested in what the other fellow's doing and doing absolutely nothing about myself. But when we can, as a family, go down this pathway, this wonderful, wonderful way, you see, Al-Anon is exactly the same as AA, exactly the same. All you have to do in that first step is to put any problem that you might have in the place of alcohol, and you've got it. Because the program works no matter what your problem is. I certainly knew that my life was unmanageable. And I had to come to see that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, to a sane way of living. And I came finally to believe in this power greater than I am. And do you know the way I had to do it? I had a good spiritual background, but I think it was all up here in my head. It was not here in my heart. And this is the difference. And during the alcoholic years, I think that I had lost every bit of spiritual faith that I had had, because I cannot remember really using it. And after Al-Anon, I had to do it this way. I had to act as though these things were true, whether I believed them or not. And you know, it's a funny thing. I had been told that if I would act as though these principles were true, that they would become true in my life, and then I would have to believe because I would have proven what I had been told. And this is so true. Because every once in a while, when I would act as though these principles were true, something very wonderful would happen in my life, and then I knew it to be true. And I had to do this where release of my children was concerned. And I found that this worked pretty well too. And I found that when I would even pretend or make believe that I was turning a problem over to this power that I choose to call God, that if I would pretend well enough, that the problem would be gone. Because I would then get busy doing something constructive and quit thinking about the problem. And the next time I became conscious of myself, I would find the problem had disappeared. Sometimes it takes some time, and I have had to learn that no matter how long you've been around this program, that you never graduate. Never, never graduate. Because I found I could be thrown back to my old way of thinking just like that. And one of my kids did it to me, and I think your children can do this better than anybody. And I was so shocked and so taken aback and so grieved, and I hurt so badly that I had to do something about it. And the first meeting that I attended in Al-Anon after this happened, I was trying to put on my usual front. And everyone in the room turned around and looked at me and they said, "What's the matter with you? You're hurting." And I didn't know I showed it. And immediately they got busy and they threw my words right back in my face. And I had to get busy and do something about it. And it took me some time. But the thing that is so wonderful about this program is that no matter what happens to you, no matter how it grieves you or upsets you, we have a way now to get ourselves back in line and back into this AA and Al-Anon way of life again. I did not have this in the old days, And this is another reason why I am so grateful to this program. I have also learned, and a lot of this I have learned from my beloved husband. I have to give him credit for some of it. And that is that what we pour out comes back again to us in kind. I have had to learn the theory of seed time and harvest. And as he expresses it so well, if you plant radishes, you sure don't get cucumbers. And that whatever I send out comes back to me, pressed down and running over, either good or bad. And if I am uncomfortable with me, I had better jolly well look at my own books and see what is making me uncomfortable, what I am sending out that I am getting back, and change what I'm sending out. Now, don't misunderstand me. I'm not standing up here like a saint and say that I have arrived, that I'm doing all of these things perfectly, because I'm not. I'm learning. You know, growing up is awfully painful, but it has its rewards. And I think the greatest thing that has happened to me in all of these years is that I have learned how to love. You see, somewhere along the line, I don't know whether I ever really knew how to love. And during the alcoholic years, I began to have that feeling which grew and grew on me that I was frozen inside. I couldn't feel anything. And for a good many years, even after Chuck got sober, I still couldn't feel the way I wanted to feel. I couldn't even feel anticipation, and it bothered me. I covered it up pretty well, and nobody knew anything about it, but this was true. But through this wonderful Al-Anon group, I am becoming unfrozen. I am now able, when someone comes up to me and says, "I love you," to be able to say, "I love you" back and mean it. And this was something that I didn't used to be able to do because it would embarrass me so. And I get so emotional in these meetings. I get emotional right along with my husband. And I love every one of you, and I enjoy being with you, and I wouldn't take $1 million for this program. And if there are any new people in this audience tonight, this afternoon rather, who are new to Al-Anon, please keep coming back, because you see, it took me about 15 or 16 years after being with this program to even begin to find me. It takes patience, it takes perseverance, and it takes some work. But I think the easiest way that I know of to do it is to be active in Al-Anon and get so busy helping somebody else that you don't have time to think about yourself. And I nearly always close with something that may become monotonous to some of you that have heard me before, that if it were necessary for Chuck and me to go through what we've been through in order to find what we found in AA and Al-Anon, it was worth it. Thank you very much.